John Koskinen's the commissioner of the Internal Revenue Service, reviewing the results of a Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration report on response the IRS has taken to their tax-exempt applications process. Mr. Commissioner, it's a pleasure to talk to you as always. This is exactly, it strikes me, the kind of story that you've expressed frustration in the past at not being able to have Congress be able to distinguish between things that happened before your tenure began and things that have happened since your tenure began. Tell me about the course of action here that this report lays out, and the timeline that's involved, too, as to when some of these things happened and what TIGTA has found looking at their follow-up to the May 2013 report. Thank you for joining me, sir.
I'm delighted to be here. Well, it is an interesting question. Obviously, a lot of the brouhaha about the social welfare determination process started 2 years ago with the Inspector General report, as you note, in May of 2013, in which he found that improper criteria had been used for selecting for further review applications to be a social welfare corporation under Section 501c4 of the code. So that has triggered, it was, as he said, it was a management set of mistakes. We have taken full responsibility for it, certainly even before I got to the IRS, and tried to assure people we take it seriously. It was a mistake that shouldn't have happened, and we should do everything we can to keep it from happening in the future. And the IG's report had a series of very specific recommendations of what we could do to, in fact, do our best to ensure we didn't have this difficulty again. And so what the IG reported now 2 years later is that a review and a study they have done of all the actions we have taken reveal that, in effect, we have implemented all the reports of the Inspector General other than completing our review of the regulations for C4 social welfare organizations. So it is a, you know, kind of independent report to the public and the Congress that the IRS has taken the problem seriously. We've remedied the system issues that the IG pinpointed and are confident that to the extent we can avoid it, we'll never have that mistake again.
You've been in the government management business for a long time, sir, and we've discussed these kinds of issues on many occasions. How do you prevent backsliding in a situation like this? It's one thing to say we've got processes and policies in place today as we sit here May 20th, 2015, to make sure that these stay in place. And I know you won't be at the IRS forever, but there is a tendency we know in government over a period of time for some backsliding to occur. How do we make sure that doesn't happen in this case again?
Well, it's a good question, and as I've always told people, organization charts don't self-execute, nor do policies and procedures. They need to be implemented by people. And so I've tried to make it clear from the start that the success of the IRS going forward in identifying these kinds of problems depends upon our employees, who are terrific and dedicated to the mission. So we've created an enterprise risk management program. And not that the agency never looked at risk before, but to try in an organized way to identify the risks in our activities and in our relationships with the public where there might be problems. And as part of that, I've now talked with, in person, over 14,000 IRS employees. And what I'm trying to get across to them is every employee should view themselves as a risk manager. And if they see a problem, see if something's not going the way they think it ought to or the way we expected, they should feel empowered to raise their hand and make sure somebody knows about that. And I think I'm finally beginning to get people after a year and a half to believe that I really do think that bad news is good news. As I tell the employees, the only problem we can't fix, can't solve, is the problem we don't know about. So I think if the organization continues to be open to feedback, both internally from employees, externally from reports by the Inspector General or the GAO, inquiries from the Congress. I've told the Congress and many of them in my personal meetings with them that we actually learn a lot when they've got a constituent who raises a concern because that may be something we should be paying close attention to. So I think going forward, we should be in a much better position in a context where, as I tell the employees, the information needs to flow from the bottom up to the top, just the way it flows from the top down to the bottom. And so I think with all of the employees who are all career employees empowered to raise their hand when they think there's a problem, I think any problem such as the one that we experienced with the C4s should be identified much earlier in the game and should have everybody's attention promptly.
Do you worry that someone might translate the title risk manager to whistleblower and associate some of the negative connotations that go with whistleblower that we've seen at other agencies in the past?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, employees are always worried about retribution. You know, will I get in trouble if I raise my hand? And that's why I've tried to make it clear that I really do believe that bad news is good news. As I tell the employees, we don't shoot the messenger, we reward the messenger. And it's important for them to feel comfortable with that. And I've tried to assure managers that they shouldn't feel threatened if there's a problem in their area, if somebody's made a mistake, that we're all in it together and we'll fix the problem, we'll remedy the mistake. Where things get difficult is where nobody knows about it. I use it in my example of the General Motors ignition switch problem. It wasn't that people didn't know about the ignition switch problem. It was that people at the top didn't know because the information didn't flow easily up. And people oftentimes are very nervous about raising a problem. And so I just think you need to build a culture where it is supportive of people saying, hey, you know, this isn't going the way we thought it should, or something's wrong over here we need to take a look at.
That certainly isn't a matter of flicking on a light switch, though, right, Mr. Commissioner? That's a process that you will need to build probably throughout the entire tenure that you're at the organization, another 4 years or so.
That is correct. It's not going to be another 4 years. This is a great job, but I've got about 2.5 years left. You know, it is an honor to be the commissioner, but it is true that you need to continue to get that message across. But thus far, I haven't had any pushback at all. The deputy commissioners, the commissioners of the various divisions of the organization, all have been very supportive with their employees about the importance of our ability to find problems quickly and solve them. As I've said some time ago when I started at my confirmation hearing, it'd be, you know, fine and fun to say, well, we'll never have a problem. It'll always go perfectly. But obviously, we deal with virtually every American in the country. We have the world's most complicated tax code, and we have 87,000 employees. So things aren't always going to go perfectly. And so it's much better to have the goal to be that if there's a problem, we'll find it quickly, we'll fix it quickly, and we'll be transparent about it. And I think if people get comfortable that that's the best response to any difficulty, we'll do just fine in the future.
You've talked pretty extensively and pretty candidly to Congress about the problems that their budget cuts have caused your agency. Is that your primary challenge right now, is trying to change minds? First of all, that your services and processes have changed sufficiently in their minds to try to convince them that it's okay, that now, that it's time now to give you back some of the resources that have been taken away?
Yes, it is from the start, my I think biggest challenge that I personally have on behalf of the organization is, in fact, to try to figure out a way to get the funding for this organization on a more stable, sustainable basis. There's been a lot of focus in the appropriation process on things that happened in the past, and I've tried to get them to understand that we have fixed those problems. You know, we don't have fancy conventions anymore. The convention spending is down 80%, and any training or meeting that spends more than $20,000, I personally have to sign off on with regard to that. There aren't videos made willy-nilly. There's a video review board now. In terms of performance awards, they don't get paid to people who have either problems with their taxes or their own performance issues. And in fact, we take very seriously the obligation of all of our employees to be tax compliant. Our compliance rate is over 99%, but for those who aren't compliant, you're subject to discipline up to and including termination. Even on the asset forfeiture seizures issue, we changed that policy last year to ensure that we're only seizing assets, even if people are violating the law by structuring their bank accounts and deposits, we're only seizing assets where the funds are derived from illegal activities. So I think taxpayers should feel more comfortable with that, even though they still are subject to prosecution for violating the law. So in some days, ways I've said, I'm trying to get people to understand that it is in a new day in the IRS in the context of most of the discussions that people have had about prior problems. They need to understand we took those problems seriously and we fixed them. And if there are new issues that get raised, and as I said, inevitably they will, our commitment is that we'll fix them and we'll be open about it.